This is WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzo. A new semester is underway at Purdue, and this year's class of incoming freshmen is one of the most academically accomplished. Joining me to talk about this and other items is Purdue President Mitch Daniels. Thanks so much.
As always, thanks for having me.
I think it was the May Board of Trustees meeting where the Dean of Admissions gave a snapshot then of what the freshman class was looking like. Tops with ACTs, SATs, GPAs. What has it turned out to be?
Final census is still a little ways off, but seems absolutely certain that yet again, it'll be the strongest academic class in Purdue history. And very exciting to me, will be populated by, it appears, a majority of the top several hundred students in the whole state of Indiana. It's really remarkable, Mike, the extent to which Purdue has become the school of choice for Indiana's very best students, with close to half or perhaps even more than half this year of them coming here, and then everyone else has to scrap over the other half.
What is it that has brought about this top-tier student? Is it admission standards? Is it the remediation being done at the community college level?
Oh, I think it's primarily the standards and the rising reputation of the school. The school's reputation gets stronger the further you get, I think, sometimes from West Lafayette and in other states and other nations. The Purdue name, largely through the great accomplishments of our alumni, is just a very powerful attraction. And so when you couple the very best students in Indiana, or the lion's share of them, with a very strong and well-prepared cadre of students from elsewhere, you get these unprecedentedly excellent classes that we're now seeing.
Does the Honors College help a little as well as an attractive?
I absolutely think it has and is going to as it grows. I've met hundreds of our freshmen already, and many of them were attracted by the Honors College and the prospect of the extra rigor that goes with it.
What's the status of scholarships, academic scholarships, that is?
We need more. We want to do more. That'll be a focus of our activities, development fundraising activities in the next year or two. You know, there's been a very strong positive reaction from not just students and parents, but from alums and many of our donors to the affordability emphasis that Purdue has committed itself to. And a lot of people are very concerned about making sure that quality higher education doesn't get out of the financial reach of the students who seek it. And so I hope that we can turn that concern into larger dollars, scholarship dollars, to go with a policy of tuition restraint and make Purdue accessible even as the quality keeps getting better.
You know, I was talking about scholarships and funding with a professor who said it seems that in her area, it was going towards the practical experience, the hands-on learning. Is that something that more and more donors are looking for, that they want to give their dollars to getting students in the workplace, so to speak, and get that sort of experience other than just the classroom?
I think donors come in every description, but I will say that hands-on learning, which is something I believe Purdue excels in already or surpasses many other schools in providing, is absolutely rising in the estimation of employers and students seeking to choose a school. And as we wrestle in the years ahead over the central question of what is it about residential education, traditional residential education, that will continue to attract students as all these other new options and technologies and so forth proliferate, the ability to work on research projects, work in teams, work in hands-on settings with others, I think is something that can differentiate us. And absolutely, there is interest among employers in the marketplace, but also interested parties, probably including some of our more committed donors.
The summer semester is on the books, and there was an enrollment increase, something that you all were pushing, the Think Summer theme, so to speak. Is it what you wanted? What was the final number?
Oh, the number of credit hours went up in the low teens, I guess, percentage-wise. That's a lot better than other schools. I believe last we saw, IU actually had a slight decline. But it's not nearly as big as we want or will need in order for the school to truly be the year-round university that I think it should be ultimately. So we've already had a couple of sessions planning for next year. This year we have a full year to prepare, promote, learn what will make it more attractive for students to use the summer a little more actively. So pleased about the right direction, not at all satisfied with the rate of progress, but bullish about the possibility of making some moves between now and next summer that mean we'll move up at a faster rate.
And there was a significant increase in online classes, correct?
In fact, the entire increase, last I looked, in credit hours was basically attributable to online. And that's just fine. The idea is to help students progress more quickly and surely toward success, and to make greater use of the assets that are sitting here during the summer months. And so whatever works, but that is absolutely right. Online was a very popular option.
Does it matter whether the enrollment is online, or do you want bodies in the seats, so to speak, in the summer?
I don't think it matters that much. As we grow the summer offerings, I hope we will get to the kind of courses which cannot be taught entirely online. Some of the things we were talking about a moment ago, for instance, that involve labs or projects and so forth. But for now, the goal is simply to encourage greater activity during the summer and a faster rate of progress for more students.
For the past 6 months or so, you've been the co-chair of the National Research Council's Committee on Human Spaceflight, and that was something you were appointed to earlier this year, correct?
Right.
What has that experience been like? What are you all working on?
Well, very broadening for me. This is not an area in which I had anything beyond the knowledge of an interested citizen. But this particular program of the National Academies was structured very much that way. And it's a very difficult assignment. This is the third, depending how you count them, at least the third major national commission in a decade about this general subject. And really almost since Apollo, the American space program has floundered and gone from one goal to another. A lot of projects started, never finished, too much politics in it, too much short-term thinking in a venture which requires sometimes decades of planning and excellent engineering to reach a certain goal. And so we're not the first group tasked with trying to chart a way forward. Odds are that if and when we write an honest and candid report, it won't make everybody happy, or maybe anybody happy. But it's been a privilege to serve. It was one of two such assignments I accepted, another from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which is about to issue its report. Our commission worked on the problems of health in young people and healthier communities, and I hope we'll make a contribution. But I've tried to be very careful about any – turned away all kinds of outside involvements, but those two commissions seemed to me to deal with important topics and were important places for Purdue to be seen in leadership.
Has there been anything on the human spaceflight hearings that's sort of blown you away? I mean, you've talked about going to the moon, going to Mars, commercialization of spaceflight.
It's all fascinating, of course. And on the one hand, the technologies are impressive. But on the other, the technological challenges of going beyond a low Earth orbit, even back to the moon in a meaningful way, in a long-term way, are very, very large. And to an extent, the early successes of the space program may have misled some people to think that each next step would be equally attainable, and some of them are very, very daunting.
And it's not an inexpensive endeavor.
It's not nearly as expensive as some people may think, but one of the learning points for all of us on the commission really was how anemic public support for a space program is. In fact, even at the time of Apollo, even as that spectacular success was being achieved, when one goes back and looks, it's startling how divided public opinion was. And so for those, and I would admit to being one, who believe that exploration and the constant search for new knowledge is at the heart of the human experience, it's a little sobering to see how indifferent many folks are, or how little they've thought about that. And one of the assignments of this committee is there a program and is there a way of talking about the program that can maintain public support for human space exploration, not robotic or other non-human means, can build and maintain that support over the long time periods it takes to achieve a new lunar presence, or let alone a meaningful visit to Mars?
Do you think that's because most people say, oh, it won't happen in my lifetime? I mean, is that sort of the mindset, or that it's not attainable for me anyway, so why should we make the investment?
Part of it in the current situation with an economy still struggling after years is that I think there's just a sense among many people that it's too remote from their experience and might in some way reduce the chances of more material progress here on Earth. I don't think that's correct, but I think it's perfectly understandable why some folks might draw that connection. But even that, saying that, when one looks back, as the commission now has, you find that support for the whole endeavor, even in boom times, economically, has never been quite as strong as you might think here at the cradle of astronauts at Purdue. It's probably always been really strong right here, but not necessarily across the broad mass of our fellow citizens.
Now, you have another meeting coming up in October. What's your overall timeline or your charge?
The assignment is to deliver a report by the end of the year under the National Academy's processes. It has to be carefully peer-reviewed and all the rest. A very serious business. And again, been clear from the outset that a realistic report would probably upset some people on one side, or if not all sides, of these questions. But it's a very wonderful group of people. I've enjoyed meeting some brilliant experts who come at this from different perspectives, and I hope we can do something that's constructive and candid, and I hope we'll further the cause in some small way of building greater interest in scientific inquiry.
And who is your co-chair?
Jonathan Lanine is a planetary scientist from Cornell University, and the panel is roughly evenly divided between technological experts in space travel. And we have economists, we have a public opinion expert, we have a couple social scientists. The charge of the commission dictated a diversity of that kind.
Purdue President Mitch Daniels, thanks for coming in.
See you next month.
You're listening to WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzow.